from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. I'm joined this half hour by novelist and memoirist Amy Tan. Her new book, Where the Past Begins, a Writer's Memoir, is a collection of what she calls quirks and interludes, along with journal entries from throughout her life and deeply personal explorations of her complex relationships with both her parents. The result is an unconventional book that provides new insight into her life and her creative process. And Amy Tan, welcome.
Good to be here.
Good to have you here. Well, this is a tough book to write. This is probably your toughest book to write in many ways, but it wasn't really planned as a book at all. It was your editor, Daniel Halpern, who kind of compelled things in many ways.
Yeah, I needed a book in between the novels as I was doing publicity. And so we came this brilliant idea to do our emails about writing, and that quickly fell apart into something that was not wise to do. And I thought I'll write a book about writing, about imagination, language, and things important to me. And as I was writing it, these examples of how I came to have the particular imagination I have started going back to childhood memories. To get this done, I actually wrote a chapter a week. I tried what I had read about imagination. If you're just spontaneous, instead of planning everything out, you have a better chance of getting something true and creative. So I did that once a week. It was like having a therapy session with myself. It was devastating at times. I would be shaking at the end. But, I have a book, and I'm a little bit, I don't know. I'm ambivalent.
Do you feel therapeutically advanced? I know this is difficult for you to go inward as much as you did.
You know, you don't. This kind of therapy, it's more realization, recognition, and it's not as though you get out of this kind of self-made therapy and you feel restored and whole and intact. And in fact, I felt angry and devastated and sad and. And also elated. It was a number of feelings, but it wasn't complete satisfaction.
Well, there's a lot of rawness in this, and there's a lot of exposing of privacy and of intimacy of your own history, really, your own personal history. And I know that created almost a sense of terror in you, I mean, in terms of putting it out there. You also described it as writing it in a fugue state.
Yeah. You know, you write a chapter a week. Have you ever written a chapter a week? It usually takes me months to write 10 pages, then I throw them away. But this came out spontaneously, sometimes 30, 35 pages a week, of unedited emotion. And I tried to go back a number of times. It should have been edited in my mind another couple of times, but that also added to my reluctance because a lot of that rawness is still there.
Well, you've got a whole new form here. You've got kind of a frappe or a collage or a pastiche. I'm not sure what if I were reviewing it, which word I would use. But there's also, that curious kind of, and it's fascinating, it's always been fascinating to me, that gulf that exists and also the proximity that exists between memory, which is unreliable so often, and fiction, what we imagine or what we conflate, and trying to get at the authenticity and the real stuff. I don't know if you, Philip Roth, who spent most of his career using fiction and memory and combining them, wrote a book called The Facts, which hardly anybody knows. And he said that the problem was I just wanted to write things exactly as they took place in my life, trauma, whatever. And it didn't have the literary artifice, so it didn't have the interest. It didn't have the vitality. But you did something here that really came out of, I think, your technical and really experience as a writer of fiction. I mean, you were able to pretty much move this forward out of yourself.
I told it in a narrative that was the actual memory, knowing that memories, as you said, are often inaccurate. We have a perspective at a different age. And I'm sure, if I were to write this 10 years from now, I'd look at it from another perspective, the moments when, for example, my mother tried to kill herself. And as a child, I experienced it differently. There is a removal as you're an adult. And I didn't have that as much that I would have, say, in fiction of writing this, knowing this is contrived, so to speak, manipulated, chosen. I had to go with it the way it actually happened, a perspective of how it happened. And that was, I learned things that whether or not they were absolutely the facts of the matter, I experienced it in the same way I did as a child.
Well, I remember a conversation we had many years ago. We've been friends for a long time, and you said to me, my father and brother died, and you write about this now, within a matter of months, both of brain tumors, and no one would believe that in a story, in a novel.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Or a mother who went crazy, actually shortly after Martin Luther King was assassinated, and took us to Switzerland, and on a romp, not exactly, you know, searching for life, or thinking we're all going to die. That also sounds like an exaggeration. It would if it were fiction.
Well, you have to, I suppose, parse ultimately. But when you're letting all of this out, it's cathartic. And to some extent, it keeps you from parsing.
Yes. It's uncensored. When I came to this, I wanted it to be to let whatever happen. One of the things I discovered that was really interesting to me is that these stories come out of emotions, visceral emotions that are still there. You know, people talk about PTSD. They can't get rid of those emotions. They're always going to be there. And that's what happened to me. I started following these visceral emotions that I had as I looked at the memory. And I said, okay, this one, I'm a little shaky. I'm going to follow this, and so on and so forth. And so these memories unveiled themselves through emotion rather than a straight narrative.
Now, I want to talk about the narrative, and I want to talk about what you deal with here. But I have to tell you about, just try to be cogent about it, an experience I had recently that pretty much highlights and resonates what you just said. When I was about 17 years old, I got a high school graduation gift, and I was driving to return it. It was a shirt for my aunt. And a child ran out from between two parked cars. I couldn't see her. I hit her. She went up in front of my windshield, and it was terribly traumatic for her and obviously to a great degree for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was trauma. And I mean, the police came out and measured skid marks. You're okay, and you're not drinking. And, you know, it's her. People said she was always darting out like that, but she was in a coma for a few days, and I was really, you know, a mess. And I only mention it because just a couple of days ago, a child ran out from the curb,
exactly.
And I hit the brake, and her father, you know, I had a dressing down with him about, you know, watch your kid. But I was shaken. I mean, I was literally shaking because the memory was right there.
And you never know when it's going to come up.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can't predict these things. And that's what happened is...
It's emotional memory, really.
Yeah, it is. It's emotional, visceral memory. And it also tied in with the kind of imagination that I think I have, because emotions are tied to the associations you make, one thing to the other. And, you know, the kind of metaphors I use, for example, I think they're related, or I discovered they are indeed related.
But you had family secrets, too, that to some extent you were obliged, I suppose. A lot of this is culture. It takes me all the way back to Esalen when you wouldn't get in the hot tub and then say, this is my culture. You know, I
knew
can't
you'd
do
bring that up. This was 25 years ago.
Wonderful share. Yeah, but, you know, you didn't want to bury yourself, you know, and this is what you're doing in this book.
That was very traumatic.
You said, that's my culture, you know.
Yeah. I wasn't planning to reveal all the secrets, but, you know, it's hard to talk about my life or look at my life without unearthing things that people, I suppose, would not talk about. It's not as though I said, oh, I better keep this a secret. I started writing about letters, about the form of letters and writing, and suddenly I started writing about my mother's letters. I discovered things about within those letters that made me sad, and I felt, you know, this poignant love for my mother, her loneliness and depression. So I was, you know, all these things came up in a different way that I did not expect.
You've written so much about your mother through the years that people have even siloed you into this mother-daughter.
I know. You'd think I'd be done.
Well, no, there's a lot here about your mother, but also about your father.
Yeah.
And you haven't really used him that much in your fiction, so to speak.
I have used him, but he dies early in
exactly.
the stories,
yeah.
just as he did when I was, you know, growing up.
And he was a Baptist minister.
American Baptist, yes.
Yeah. How did that affect you? I mean, the religion being so, to some extent, pervasive in your early life.
It led me to think that everything should be handed to you, what you believe, and that you should strive for those higher beliefs, which are sort of impossible. And after my father and brother died, I rebelled so intensely against that feeling. I had to find what I believed in through hard work and knowing that it was mine and not anything handed to me. Because the miracles didn't happen, the prayers didn't happen. I thought it was good, and they still died. That was a child's memory of that. Something I didn't write in this book that was a lot more complicated. During that time, I was actually sexually molested by the youth minister who was counseling me about my father who was dying. He made me cry, and then he tickled me and said not to cry. And, of course, I couldn't breathe, and that's when it happened. And I only mention this now because so many women have had an experience like that. It's absolutely common. But it did a lot in terms of changing me and making me not trust religion or people who were so, you know, called self-described religious.
Talking with Amy Tan, and her new book is Where the Past Begins, a writer's memoir. She's with us to the half hour because we are going to be talking with Attorney General Becerra, but you can be with us as well, and I invite your calls and your emails, and please feel free to join the program. Have questions or comments, especially we'd like to hear from listeners about this, strange conflation sometimes of memory and the unreliability of it with what could be called the fictive or the imagination, and how we, I always like to quote Jerzy Kosinski, who's a novelist who won the National Book Award many, many years ago, but probably isn't read much anymore, who said that you accommodate your memories with your emotions and with the stage of life you're at and so forth. That's a big question, and let me throw it out to you, our listeners. Let me invite you to join us. Any questions you might have for Amy Tan or response to her work, you can join us at 866-733-6786, and you can join us now. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. A number of other ways you can make comments or questions and bring them forward to Amy Tan. Email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I'm going to talk about your mind here as a pinball machine.
I when I write spontaneously, and I don't censor anything, everything comes out back and forth through these associations. When I was writing letters to my editor, Dan Halpern, I would write whatever came to mind about what I was thinking about the novel. Should the character do this? Should she be disturbed? Should her mother? Oh, but if she does, here's... And my editor thought I was being actually serious about all these possibilities. And I had to write to him, said, no, that's my pinball mind. Which I think many writers do. You're searching through possibilities, but I would express it in the form of an email. And that also led me to think that I should try to do this in writing something else, not just emails, but the fact it was so loose, so open to possibilities. And I do that in novel writing. I should be more aware of it and let that happen.
Well, that's the form of the novel. I mean, thanks to James Joyce, we now have novels that have this huge canvas where you can pretty much
include whatever you want. No one would publish that these days. it's too big.
Well, yours is big. What was the hardest thing for you to write about in this?
I think it was my father, the chapter, because I started writing it. I was supposed to be done writing this. I had a deadline, and I got to the point where I would begin that chapter. It was the day after the election. And I was devastated. I couldn't think. And suddenly I said to myself, how would my father have voted? And I was scared to think about that because he was a Baptist minister, an American Baptist minister. And I knew he'd written a sermon about the importance of saying the Lord's Prayer in classroom. So what would he do? And I went through this trying to gather as many memories as I had about him to see what kind of person he was. That was heartbreaking at times. It was, you know, I couldn't look at him in the idealized way I always had. I pushed myself to see other aspects. And I found his diaries. I found his sermons. I started reading all of these things, letters. And I came up with a different view of him. But ultimately, the answer I wanted, which was that he would not have voted for Trump.
And you found comfort in that.
I did. But I also found so much about his character that I thought was disturbing. For example, he saw me toward the end of his life as a girl who was, you know, troubled and disobedient and unsupportive of the family. And that made me very sad. I found these letters. And I always thought I was his favorite. And I found evidence that I was not. You know, those are hard things to deal with, especially if you discover it when you're a child. But when you take yourself back into the child's mind and emotions, it's still very, very difficult.
Was it also hard to write about a miscarriage?
That was not so difficult. It was almost victorious to me because, you know, I became pregnant accidentally, and I was worried. I worked with kids with disabilities, and I had been drinking on vacation. I thought, oh, my God, this child, I've done something to it and wasn't ready. I asked my mother. I told my mother, I said, I'm pregnant. I don't know what to do. And my mother said, we were sitting in the car, and she said to me, you know, if you want this baby, it doesn't matter if you're poor. You can do anything. And then she said, if you don't want this baby, no one can tell you that you must have this baby, not your mother-in-law, not your husband, not your friends, nobody. And it was such a release of knowing that it was my decision. She was an early, I guess you would call it a feminist, in saying, you decide what you do with your own body and your life. And that alone made me realize that my father would not have been able to vote for a party that said, we will decide what you do with your body, because my mother had had 3 abortions. She had also had an affair with my father, and my mother would have said, who are you to say that I am worse than you are, that you can decide my future? So knowing that she would have had a part in how he would have voted, was something I came to realize.
Our guest is Amy Tan. Her new book is Where the Past Begins, a writer's memoir. Alicia writes, you think that you were able to see things more clearly about the past at midlife and again after 50?
Every person is going to change their view of their life, I think, as the decades go on. I certainly did. By the way, I forgot to mention that I did have a miscarriage. I did not have an abortion. So the question was taken care of by this misfortune. But I do feel that I could never write the same book. For example, Joy Luck Club. If I were to write it today, it would be a completely different book. Because as you're writing, there are different perspectives and things that are important. So the same with memoir. Because I draw from experiences, emotional experiences, as I am writing fiction. The question of how I would look at my mother and the suicidal attempts that she made. And
she actually just jumped out of a car, right?
She tried to jump out of the car. She tried to run into the street on Venice Avenue with a lot of traffic. And these things were very sudden. But combining that with finding letters and knowing more about her life and where this originated, I didn't know many years ago all the details I know now about my grandmother and how that might have affected my mother as a child. And so the information you discover, as well as information about yourself, adds to how you remember events. You get to see how much of yourself has been influenced, has taken on some aspects of a parent's character, for
example. But you knew your grandmother, for example, you knew that she died of an opium overdose, and you knew that she was, I guess what you call a courier of one of those women who played a sort of Chinese geisha role.
Courtesans.
I couldn't think of
that. Yeah. You know, I've gone back and forth on that. You know, I saw a costume she was wearing, and I started thinking, oh, she was a courtesan, because it was, down to the last detail, that of a courtesan.
It was a photograph, yeah.
It was numerous photographs.
Yeah.
Why did she take these photographs? And then I thought of myself and who I am and who my mother was in terms of a sense of humor and my fondness for costumes. And I thought it very well could be she was a spoiled girl, and her parents let her do anything she wanted. And courtesans in those days were heroines to young girls. They fainted when they saw them. And I thought, oh, she could have gone to one of those photography studios, you know, and put on a costume and did it every year with her cousin. That was a possibility, and I could not ignore it, especially in looking at my own character and the fondness that I have for things I saw in the photos.
Was it hard writing about the Lyme disease?
No. You know, when I was finally diagnosed, I was elated. I was grateful. And I decided that it was important for me to write about this so that others knew that it was a struggle to get diagnosed and that there was life after getting Lyme disease. And so I made it my mission, in fact, to let people know so they were not hopeless. And
yeah, thinking, but you went through hell.
My hell was small compared to a lot of people who lost their homes, lost their husbands, and got heart disease and died. So I'm here. I'm talking to you. I think I'm making sense. I hope I am.
Put the things into perspective.
Yeah,
you're making
a lot of sense. We have to make. Not only are
you making sense, but let me read a comment from LaWanda. It's good. Point to end with, and it's always good for writers to hear. She writes, I'm so glad to hear Amy Tan's voice. I think she's a wonderful writer, always upfront, honest, and controversial.
Best comment. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much. Always delighted to see you and have you. Thank you for being here. Amy Tan. Again, her book is Where the Past Begins, a Writer's Memoir. And when we return, Attorney General Javier Becerra will join us. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny. This is coming up tomorrow on Forum at 9:30, Rape on the Night Shift. We'll preview a newly updated PBS Frontline documentary examining sexual harassment in the janitorial industry. Then at 10, my guest will be UC Berkeley linguist Robin Lakoff. Her latest book is Context Counts, Papers on Language, Gender, and Power. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. And to subscribe to our podcast, visit kqed.org/forum.